This is Rainbow Six Radio, bringing you
the Next Generation Podcast for talk, news, and information for all things Rainbow Six.
Hey everybody, it is Icy Cat and Captain coming at you again with another episode of Rainbow Six Radio, keeping us going through this quarantine phase. How you doing with all of that there, Captain?
Surviving, just like everyone else. Little stir crazy, little cabin fever, but gotta do what you gotta do.
Well, and I know the standards are different all over the country, but where we're at right now, we're looking at, what did our governor say about like April 24th or something?
So yep.
That's a whole month yet.
Shelter in place until April 24th. He called it something different to give it a little Midwest niceness, but you know, it's pretty much don't leave your house unless you have to go to the grocery store or the hospital.
Yeah.
Or the liquor store.
But, so that's a lot of time to be hunkering down, but hopefully we will help you get through all of that with your weekly podcast over here at Rainbow Six Radio. And just as usual, I want to invite everybody that if you haven't already, please join our community discussion over on Reddit. You can find us at Rainbow Six Radio on Reddit. That is six spelled out, S-I-X, not the number six, but please join us over there in that community. People are posting comments and threads, sharing gameplay examples and video clips, and it gives you guys a chance to interact with us. And we do actually answer your threads and your posts and have some discussions going over there. So if you want to have that that level of community, that level of interaction during these times of self-quarantine, that is a place to kind of let some of that out. So with that, let's move into our first pro tip. And this is one that Captain, you and I kind of combo on pretty frequently whenever it comes up. So, you know, the map is Consulate.
Yep.
And the site is upstairs on the administrative office side. So that would be the room with all the cubicles in it. There's not a lot of walls to reinforce in that particular site. There's some, but it's
only just in one area. Yeah.
Right. The big weakness on that site is the three windows that open up on it, especially if you get like a fuse or somebody sitting on those and really making trouble for everything. So we have a couple of operators that we pick when we get that site. And you go with?
I always go with Castle.
Right. And I'll take the mute. What we do is during that setup phase, I'll let Captain kind of, you know, explain the route that he goes through on that. But my role initially is to just jam the three stairwells so that they can't even get drones up there. And if I do my job effectively, I can get all three stairwells jammed. A drone never gets up there. So I'm going to, right off the bat, I'm going to hit that one right outside the admin that comes down from projector, that first stairwell. Then I'm going to run over to spiral staircase, jam that one, and then finally back into the corner over by yellow staircase. Usually by that time, maybe the first drone is kind of coming up there by the time I get to that third one, but I can shoot it. Typically, I can prevent any drones from getting up any of the three stairwells.
Another thing, like usually the bonus is when you are in with a squad of more than two people, you can always have that third person guard that last stairwell until you get there. So they can actually, you know, if they do see a drone come up, they can take care of it.
Usually about the time I put that third drone jammer down, the time is beginning to run out. So, you know, I've got maybe 5 or 10 seconds left on the prep phase clock. So then I'll just be ready to pick that last one back up again and then kind of pick them up as I go back. By that time, Captain, you've done your work with the castles. What's your strategy on your end?
Basically, depending on wherever I start, I just rip down window by window and put the castle barricades up. When I'm done with that, I reinforce whatever walls are done so you don't have to worry about that. And you can just get the mutes back under the castle reinforcements of the windows. Because there are only three windows, and obviously castle has three reinforcements. And that, you know, just makes it a lot easier for... you know, the only way that they can actually get in then is with a sledge, Ash, or Zofia.
And by the time you've kind of gotten them all pulled down, I'm coming back then from picking up the three jammers that I had set down.
Yep.
And now I'm putting them down on those windows.
Right.
And typically there's enough time to do that, even though we're now a few seconds into the action phase. Again, as you mentioned, unless they have like that Ash or the Zofia that can hit those windows from range. But otherwise, you know, if they've got a sledge, that sledge still has to climb up there at least before they can break the window on us. But, you know, in that time, I'll get those three mute jammers then repurposed on those three windows. And it winds up making, again, unless they have somebody that can be like a Sledge or an Asher or a Zofia, it just stops them cold in their tracks. There's nothing they can do for that. So it's a really nice combo. And then because all the rest of the walls in that site are hard, you know, like non-breachable walls, with the exception of the one that overlooks the one stairwell, as well as the one that goes into that sort of, I don't know, what do you call that? The kind of that break room that's sort of sandwiched in there. Those are the only soft walls you really have to worry too much about.
Yeah.
So Mutant doesn't need to be needed so much on any kind of walls. Although that fourth jammer, I will sometimes put on that one soft wall that does, if it were open, it would overlook that stairwell. And that's just to counter any Hibana that might throw her charges on that wall and try to hit it from projector room side. So between the three jammers on the castle windows and then the fourth one to block the Hibana, it winds up making the site pretty secure. And then as Mute, I often like to have my secondary in that particular objective be the deployable camera. And then I will, there's a spot. So if you're looking at the two windows that are in the room to the right of those. So if you're facing from inside the objective, if you're facing those two windows to the right of the rightmost window, if you get up on that desk there and place your deployable camera right on that wall standing on the desk, that deployable camera then will show, even though it's a fixed view, it'll show about 2/3 of the objective from that room, as well as look out down that main double wide door hallway that they'll push in through. So it winds up being a really great combo of intel, security. It really fortifies it pretty well.
Yeah, it really turns. So, you know, that's one of the objectives that no one really likes to deal with. So it really, it kind of gives a good solid defense, because really, under most circumstances, you're really funneling people through just two areas. And that's, you know, that makes it really nice.
Right. And when we see that they have that Sledge or the Zofia or whatever, it's like, oh, you know, that wrecked the plan. But when the other team does not have the composition to deal with it, it really screws them up, and there's nothing that they can do. So
absolutely,
you know, there's nothing better than comboing a castle and a Mute in such a way that it really does make his castle panels finally effective, because you can't even put a fuse cluster charge on there, because that's right. Jam too. Okay, well, we've noticed something interesting in the most recent update that had come out. So first of all, there was a new patch that came out just the other day. It was pretty small, and the development team had warned us that, you know, due to the situation with everybody kind of doing the shelter in home, working from home kind of a thing, that the development team would not be putting out very large patches coming up. And this first one, the first patch in a season is routinely just bug fixes. It doesn't usually offer anything, I would say, very substantive as far as like gameplay changes or operator reworks or nerfs or buffs or anything. You know, it doesn't really do those kinds of things typically. And so this seemed to be in line with that. It was a smaller patch. We just saw some bug fixes. Nothing really changed the way the game plays at all. But we did see one kind of an interesting thing, and people have been posting about it, wondering if it was a bug or if it was an intentional change on the lighting on a very specific map, and that is Consulate. If you have played Consulate at all recently, you may have noticed that lighting looks a little different than it typically has, right?
Absolutely. I would even go in to say maybe significantly different if you're paying attention.
Yeah. Now, we encountered this when we were playing last night, and it was interesting because I feel like at the time I was really just trying to stay alive more so than anything else. So like I noticed it, but it was kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, that's different. But then I was just kind of like getting on with my gameplay. I feel like it didn't like break the gameplay at all. But what I experienced was that overall the map felt a lot dimmer, a lot darker. There were still some well-lit places, of course, but there was also noticeably just these like pockets of shadow. And not to the point where like a person would be completely invisible if they were like crouched down into a certain corner, but you know, maybe if they were wearing an all black camo, maybe if they were crouched and not moving, and maybe if a person wasn't paying a lot of attention, might be possible to kind of miss them again if you're not paying attention, right? it kind of reminded me of old theme park, not new theme park.
Right. But old, yeah.
Yeah. It had those deep pockets of shadow too. How do you think it looked?
I actually thought it looked really nice. I really enjoyed kind of going back and looking at the footage of us playing. And it almost looked not, it almost kind of looked like if Consulate was actually played at nighttime. So there wasn't those bright lights that opened everything up. So maybe just, you know, not like emergency lights, but just like night lights in a way, so that like you could still see everything, but it wasn't like, you know, everything was bright.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, again, the closest comparison I kind of have to that is that it felt to me like, you know, old theme park kind of looked with those deep pockets of shadow. And I know that when theme park came out, that started a big thing in the pro league circles where they felt that the shadows were an unfair thing because it didn't create a competitive environment. It created hiding spots, basically, where people could be positioned and they could be missed. And they felt like that was not a competitive style of lighting that complemented the game. Now, a lot of the I got to be careful of saying a lot. I know that there are pro players that on PC, when they play, will take their graphic settings and dumb them down to the simplest possible graphic settings, because what that does is it eliminates all shadows. It eliminates reflections. It eliminates like every possible thing, which gives them the crispest, cleanest frame rates. But also everything is like lit full bright.
Right.
And so there aren't any deep pockets of shadow. There aren't, any, you know, so like that's a style in which they like to play because they like to just have like perfect clarity on everything at all times. And they will actually take the game down to like, it looks bad, but for them, they're optimizing their, not only their frame rates, but their viewable experience too, what they can see, being situationally aware. They're trying to max that out, and to them that's all that matters. Whereas to other people, they're like, you know, I kind of like having, you know, these rich warm colors and these deep dark shadows and these, you know, interesting lighting areas. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to try to say this as nicely as possible. If you're a pro player and you're playing on a competitive level, but you're complaining about some shadows and maybe someone who is able to hide in the shadows, this entire game is about getting an advantage, you know, being strategic about what you're doing. If you're taking that all away and you're just like, everything has to be bright, then like, why is there stuff that you can hide behind? Why not just make it an open area and everyone just shoot at each other?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of changes that have kind of redirected that, in that you'll see that maps that have come out, they've gone to more like that bigger maze-like feel in a lot of them. They've gone to more of the box room design.
Yeah.
They've done a lot less things to hide behind. You know, so you'll see a lot of evidence of those kinds of changes where they actually are listening to what the pros say and putting that into their new map design. Map lighting.
Well, they should stop.
Huh?
No, nothing. Keep going. I said they should stop listening to the pro league.
Well, there's some value, you know. I mean, like,
I know.
I mean, like, you take a look at some maps, like, you know, Favela or House or whatever, that have like some very broken sights on them that are almost impossible to be competitive. But you know, I think that there's still value in those maps. They just need to be, you know, certain sites need to be fixed, like living room on House, or, you know, the top of grow room on Favela or whatever, you know. I mean, there's definitely some things to be fixed that the map designers kind of maybe made some poor decisions with that could have been done better.
Oh, but sure.
I think when we talk about like the whole shadows thing, so you were making an interesting point about the game is about trying to get an advantage on people. And I think that from the pro perspective, they would have a very different point of view than us on this. And that's okay. Like their day job is playing Rainbow Six, like 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, right? They just live, eat, breathe, sleep this game. And that's all they do. So they want everything to be as predictable, as consistent, as same, as, dare I say, sterile as possible at all times, because when you're playing competitively, you need to rely on things not being variable.
Yeah, for sure. I hear that.
But it's one of those things where they're playing it for a very different set of reasons with a very different set of experiences behind them than the other 99% of the people that play the game.
Right.
And I think it's kind of neat to have areas that can be hidden in. Mm-hmm. So as you were saying, if there's a way that I can get an advantage on somebody, you know, so now you've, you know, made all the maps, these box maps with maze-like hallways and gotten rid of the clutter of things to hide behind, and made everything day glow bright. When I look at what happened with Consulate, whether it was an accident or whether it was an intentional reintroduction of some older lighting, to me, it was like, you know, I think there's some value in being able to be like, oh, I'm using some map knowledge right now where I know that there's a deep pocket in this hallway in this corner and I'm going to hide there. And if you don't have the map knowledge I have to know that that's there, I might get the drop on you. Or if exactly. You didn't drone me out, you might not have seen me hiding, you know, in this one little spot. And again, we're not talking about shadows that are so dark a person turns invisible.
Like, right, exactly.
They're not that extreme. But it could make the difference between somebody like... people on PC flick around really fast. Like we're console players, right? So when you're using a controller,
we don't know what the flick is in comparison to the PC.
We know what a flick is, but it's like the way they move is just like light years beyond how a controller moves. I mean, it's just like, you know, I can't even see how they can get visual information into their brain with the speeds at which they're just, you know, spinning around and moving and stuff. But if you're playing like that, yeah, I could see how somebody would be easy to miss in a deep pocket of shadow in a corner.
Right.
Because you're just whipping around everywhere so fast at the speed of light. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you take a second and you drone it, or you, I don't know, move fast but not necessarily breaking the speed limit, you know, you're going to notice them. It's not like it's turning you invisible or something.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
So with that, let's move on then to the next thing that just came out in the last day or so, and that is the new Battle Pass, Phase 1 Battle Pass. So they had given us the mini Battle Pass last year, and then they kind of came out with one around the time of the 6th Invitational that they were doing for as part of that event.
Yep.
So this is kind of like the first, I don't know, dare I say normal one?
Normal one, yeah. Normal or official.
Yeah, just kind of like what it's going to look like from here forward.
Right.
What
is it? 135 tier or 35 tiers?
35 tiers. Yep.
35, not 100.
No. And if you buy the premium track.
The premium, right.
So everybody.
What is the free one?
I forget how many are in the free one, but it's like it skips a whole bunch. So there's 35 levels, right?
Right.
And if you're on the free one,
you only get them every like couple levels.
Yeah, it's like it'll go three and then you get an unlock. And then you have to go three more levels and then you get an unlock. And then maybe it goes four levels of nothing and then you get an unlock. Like it's really a lot more sporadic, whereas the premium track is you get something unlocked.
Every single level.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we took a look at what some of those items are, and I had done a video on that kind of showing what they are, but you can also go into the game yourself, and whether you buy the premium track or not, you can kind of, you know, browse through it and see what it offers. You know, what do you think of some of the stuff that we've seen on there?
There's a couple interesting things. I know you have some stuff that you want to talk about, so I'm going to leave that to you. But I will say, out of everything that I looked at, one thing that I thought was intriguing was, the Valkyrie headgear. Where she just had the shaggy hair.
Yeah.
And that's actually not in, as I'm looking at the picture, it's not in that. Valkyrie's not in that, image, which is kind of interesting. But,
what image are you referring to?
So basically, there is a bunch of people on Reddit that, you know, obviously none of us are doing anything right now with our lives. so everyone's playing Rainbow Six Siege, props to you. And there is the person who actually did, I feel like you might be able to explain it better than I can, but essentially there was an artist that did kind of like the graphics for what the battle pass was going to be. And then, you know, so you had these graphics before the actual Battle Pass came out, and then they had the actual images of what they were, you know, when you actually look at the Battle Pass, and some of them look significantly different.
Oh, right.
And a lot of people were up in arms. And I think you can go into better detail about that than I can, but
yeah. So what we can do is we can post this image over on the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit, and you guys can see for yourself the image that we're talking about. But I just wanted to clarify which image we were talking when you referenced
it. Yeah, sorry.
No, that's fine. So there was basically an artist rendering at Ubisoft where they, as part of the, they're calling it the Around the World Battle Pass for Phase 1, and they had this, I don't know, anime kind of like animation sequence that they put together with the various operators. And they show the renditions of the operators wearing what are supposedly the uniforms that are part of this event. So they show Doc and Buck and Mira and Dokubi, Thatcher and Ash on there. And that's what you were saying, that the Valkyrie headgear wasn't shown as part of that lineup. Mm-hmm. But the only one that really looks like the uniform that you unlock is Buck's. All the other ones they show are like not even close. I would say Dokubi's is close. I mean, she does have the extra.
Yeah, Dokubi is close.
She wears the tablet on the as part of the chest rigging, so that does cover up. Whereas in the animation sequence, whatever, it shows her without that. But otherwise, I mean, like I would argue that okay, I can see how that is that. But some of the other ones, like Thatcher's, is just weird. I saw that and I was like, okay, why is he wearing yellow pants with a green top? And then in the animation sequence, you can see that he's actually showed in his fisherman attire, which is like a mustard yellow overalls over like a green sweater.
Yep.
But the outfit you get is just Thatcher's normal uniform, and the top is green and the pants are yellow. That's nothing like the fisherman yellow overalls with the green sweater that he's shown as.
No, that's clearly someone just doesn't have fashion sense.
Right. And then they go on to Mira, right? They show Mira also wearing like they look like either jean overalls or some kind of navy blue overalls with like a purple like worker muscle shirt, whatever. And then you show her actual uniform. And it's just her actual normal uniform. It's just the color is blue pants with a purplish shirt underneath the armor of it all. But it's just her normal uniform, you know, as far as like what they were showing made the operators look like they were wearing different sets of clothing, like civilian clothing in some of these examples. And it's totally not what you wind up getting.
Right.
I think the worst example of this, though, is Doc and Ash.
It's got to be Doc and Ash, both of them.
Well, because the uniforms they show them wearing, like the actual uniforms you unlock, are like the most conspicuous red alert red you will ever see, right? Especially Doc's, because I think it's his pants as well, whereas Ash is just the top.
Right.
But so picture Doc how he is, and just picture like pretty much everything on him red, except for one shoulder pauldron is white and the other shoulder pauldron is black.
Otherwise, it's black, yeah.
Everything else is red. In the anime thing that it shows him wearing like a civilian like slacks and dress shirt with a red and white medic like windbreaker jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And his headgear is like his head. It's like there's no helmet on it. It's like the Doc that we've seen in the CGI sequences when they show his actual head without the helmet on. And I look at that, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then you see the operator skin, and it's like, it's just this tomato paste thing. And I'm like, that is like the worst case of misrepresentation ever.
Yeah.
And then for Ash, they show her wearing like this, like, I don't know, dark gray, like midriff tank top thing with these bandage wrapped, what do you call them? Like the forearm guards or whatever for boxing. Mm-hmm. And then she's wearing like gray sweatpants, you know, like she's going to be in the gym and her whole thing is like a boxing thing. Cause the charm that comes with her is a boxing charm, but then her headgear, and in the picture, it's just her head, right? There's not even the FBI baseball cap. There's nothing on it, but her headgear in the event is this, like, what do you call that?
I don't know the actual term of it, but I know it's when,
it's like the head guard.
Yeah, just when you're starting out boxing, when you're actually doing competitive boxing, before you hit like that professional level, you have to wear a very specific headgear to protect your head from concussions, and that's what she's wearing.
Right. But in the anime representation of the character for the event, she's not wearing that. And again,
not wearing that.
She had this cool, like she's working out boxing at the gym kind of a thing. So it's the bandage forearms. Those are not present. They're her normal, what are they, like the half finger gloves that are like black and red. And then instead of the cool, like midriff, tank top thing that she's got on, it's her normal uniform. Again, black and red with that overemphasis on the red. And then like, oh, she was wearing gray sweatpants, so her pants are gray.
Right. Like, and also just for the clarification, because people might not see this image before they hear the podcast, in kind of the anime picture of her, that like sports bra thing she's wearing is not red at all. It's just black.
Right. In fact, there's no red.
There's no red at all.
Yeah. And it's one of these things of like, I don't know. I feel like if these are supposed to be the representations of what you get, because like this is the promo for this anime thing is the promo for the battle pass. Right. So it's like, look at all the cool stuff you can get. By the way, the only one of these that actually looks like what you get is Bucks.
Yep.
Docs and Mirrors and kind of Dokubi and Thatcher and Ash are all completely different than what we're showing you is what you can get. But hey, some of the colors are kind of the same. I mean, like, come on.
I will say, though, never mind. I won't say anything. I'll just leave it at that because I was going to compare Caviera's Elite to Ash, and that obviously is different. So,
it's not because, like, her Elite, the way her actual Elite looks is a little bit like how Ash's proposed skin looks in the anime.
Exactly.
It's a toned down version. It's because I think Ash's or Caviera's Elite has like the reds and the blacks and it's a little bit more flashy, whereas Ash's is really muted. It's grays and it's toned down and stuff. Right. But I don't know. It's just like the worst case ever of misrepresentation for like, here's the advertisement for a battle pass. By the way, 90% of this is not what it looks like at all.
Oh, you mean like Operation Health? Sorry.
Another interesting thing that came to light with the battle pass that people are talking about is they're comparing it, the battle pass in Siege, to the battle pass in other games and talking about the relative value of it. So right now, if you want to pick it up in game, the battle pass is 1200 rainbow credits, right? This is the premium tier. The free tier is obviously free. Like you don't have to worry about that at all. But if you get the premium tier, it's 1200 rainbow credits. On the premium track, there are five different positions where you unlock 120 rainbow credits. So add that up, that's 600 rainbow credits. If you go through and progress the entire track, you will get half of your rainbow credits back. Okay. Other games do this kind of thing too when you work the battle pass. So somebody came out with a graphic where, and we can make this one available as well so people can see it on the Rainbow Six Reddit, but they were comparing different games' battle pass concepts and the return for value that you get. So the comparisons they were making were Rainbow Six Siege, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Fortnite, and Apex. All right. So Rainbow Six, the cost is 1,200 credits, approximately 10 bucks. Modern Warfare, 1,000 CP, approximately 10 bucks. Fortnite, 950 V-Bucks, approximately 10 bucks. Apex, 950 coins, approximately 10 bucks. Okay. Now, the return, so this is the amount that you can earn back as you play. For Siege is 600 credits. For Modern Warfare is 1,300 CP, which is actually more than what it costs to get it. And you'll see this trend actually continuing forward here. The return on Fortnite is 1,500 V-Bucks for the 950 V-Bucks that you purchased it for. And for Apex, it's 1,000 coins versus the 950 that you purchased it for. You actually wind up earning more than what you paid for it in the other ones, whereas for Siege, you get half back. Now, with a little caveat, if you have the battle or if you have the season pass already, you do get, what is it, like, I think it's 30% reduction in price off that 1,200.
Yeah.
So you could be essentially getting it for even less. So the difference of 600 return off 1200 could be more like a 600 return off of, I don't know, what is it, like 840 or something like that.
And yeah. Still, you're still losing. You're still losing in this.
You're not losing much.
Like, not losing much.
I'd argue it's not a bad deal that way.
It's not. No, it's not. But you're like in all the other ones that they're comparing it to, if you play the entirety and you get through the all of the levels, you will have essentially made more so that you could continue to, you could use those CP or V-Bucks or coins or whatever to purchase the next one. So basically, like, one time you're paying for it, and every single time if you play through the entirety, you don't have to pay for it anymore because you can just use those to go towards it.
And that's not the only difference. Because also the amount of tiers or the amount of levels that you can unlock is wildly different too. Siege is the only one with a 35-level tier system. For Modern Warfare, Fortnite, and Apex, they all have 100-level tiers for unlocks. Mm-hmm. Now, that means that you have to grind for a longer time to go through much more levels to see those returns. So I guess a fair question might be how many people might even make that grind. How many people might get far enough to get that level of return? That would have to be a seriously dedicated player.
Well, I'm sure also the XP for each one is significantly different to make it.
I'm sure it's not a straight apples to apples comparison. And I do have to be fair and say that I do not play those other games. So I don't have personal firsthand knowledge of how those work. But, you know, for the community posting this and saying, hey, these are the values the other games get. These are how much they cost, how much you get back, and how much more it offers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what the poster of this had originally said was, they said that Rainbow Six Siege has the least content, the worst return, the worst value, and the same price. They say they'd like to support Ubisoft and the Battle Pass without being nickel and dime for worse content. I hope that they improve it. You think that's fair?
I agree wholeheartedly. And I know a couple episodes ago we were talking about how you're still obviously going to buy the Battle Pass, and especially now, you know, supporting games that we really care about, especially during a pandemic time, it makes sense. But yes, I definitely, now that I actually see everything in the Battle Pass, everything that it's worth, it's like, okay, so I'm spending 1,200 credits to get two things that I actually like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, I mean, that is kind of, it's kind of a lot, especially since, like, you know, it minus the people that bought the season pass last year and got the 600 rainbow credits, like, you have to buy then, you know, 1,200 credits. You have to spend $10 to get this pass. And, you know, who knows, you know, people who are super into cosmetics and stuff might really enjoy this. But like for me, it's like everything is super flashy. It's going to make me stand out more. So I'm not going to use them as much as I thought I would. Some of the skins are OK. I'm not a huge person on charms, but like, you know, so for me, it's like I feel like I'm only purchasing this because I support this game.
I'm there with you on that. I'm not big into cosmetics as a rule. I do enjoy new uniforms, though. I like new uniforms.
But these uniforms are terrible, in my opinion.
Most of them are. I like the Buck one.
The Buck one's good. Buck one is good.
I'm also kind of into the Castle one that they didn't show as part of this example. The Castle one's pretty cool, too. But that again, he wasn't misrepresented.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, for me, the purchase of the Battle Pass has more to do with wanting to support the long-term development of the game rather than necessarily, like, needing the cosmetics. Because at the end of the day, nobody needs the cosmetics. They're cosmetics. And if you don't like the system, you don't have to opt into it anyway. There's the free track, you know? So
exactly.
And, you know, I got to be careful with how much I criticize this based on this information because I don't play Modern Warfare and Fortnite and Apex. So I don't really know how divergent the comparison may be. For instance, they may have, and I'm just spitballing here because I don't know, but they may have a 100 tier progression system, but maybe they don't have an unlock every level on the premium. Whereas right. on 35 level Siege does have an unlock every level. Then again, maybe they do. I don't know.
Most games do. Like even Rocket League has. I don't know actually how far that tier goes, but I started playing Rocket League 3 months ago with one of my brother-in-laws, and I bought the pass for that, and I got to like 153 or something, and every single level it was an unlock, but if it was the free one, it was like every 10 levels or something. So I think most of them, if you're actually spending the money, they're going to give you something for every tier that you get to. It's just a matter of if it's like cool or not, you know.
Right.
But yeah, also, you know, this weekend, I don't know how many were able to get on, probably everyone, because we're not doing anything with our lives. But the first arcade event actually came out. So I think it started, what, Thursday? The Golden Gun event came out. And it was, you know, we knew what it was going to be, and it definitely delivered. You know, there was a couple things that were a little different. You know, there was no prep phase, you know, so the game immediately started. The attackers knew exactly where the objective was. The defense didn't have any time to necessarily reinforce, and actually defenders only got one reinforcement per person. The operators were a little bit limited, so they didn't have operators that gave people buffs, so Finca wasn't in it. Doc wasn't in it. Rook wasn't in it. There's a couple other characters that weren't in it that would have given an advantage to the base of what this actual game was, where it's just basically GoldenEye, you had the golden gun and you were one shot, one killing people. And it was fun, you know. The only map that it was the New Oregon. But it was kind of cool to be able to, you know, you had your secondary gadget that you could still use. You could still use your abilities. So it was kind of like a little strategic in that part, but it was still that fun, like, you know, just running around with one pistol, shooting people. And I think the coolest thing for me, like I wasn't a huge fan of this, just because I'm not really good with pistols. I kind of get into a panic mode and I just like pull the trigger and fire at whatever is running towards me, whether it's my teammates or the enemy.
can confirm.
Yes, can confirm. But the fact that like you only got one shot, you know, so you kind of had to be strategic with your shots. But like the coolest thing for me, it was the actual reload animation.
Yeah.
You know, you took the shot, you know, the clip comes out, you spin the gun around and put the clip back in, and that's it. And it actually takes time. So it's not just like one shot, quick reload, one shot. It's like one shot, and there's like, what, 3 seconds maybe, like yeah, during probably. The reload animation, 2 or 3. And then, you know, you got the extra shot. So, you know, that was really cool for me.
Yeah. I haven't seen a reload animation that cool since Mozzie. When he does exactly. his little flip out thing, like that's, I really love those kind of things. And props to the Siege animation team, because they Absolutely. Find ways to make such unique little specific animations like that. Like they didn't have to code a unique motion captured animation for Mozzie that reflected his ADD personality. And yet they did. And it gives that such, I don't know, personality.
Right.
And then, the you know, this like fun little, you know, flip it around. It almost reminds me of in Terminator 2 when he's on the bike and he does like the little flip with the shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost kind of like that, where it's like it's tactical. It's not tactical.
Right.
But it's just so fun to watch.
Team tactical. I will say the first time I played, I just like got on in the morning by myself and I was like, oh, Golden Gun Arcade, let's give it a try. And, you know, just like whatever, you know, join the game, run around, see someone and I shoot. And the second, because I didn't know that that animation was going to be a thing, you know, so when they added that in, I lost my mind. I was geeking out. It was, you know, my wife like came into the room and she's like, what's wrong with you? I was like, I'm sorry, I'm just so excited right now.
So what did you think of the mode itself?
It was fun. It definitely was different. I think you know, they made every effort to make it like it's a 5v5, go kill each other. Don't be as strategic as you would normally.
Almost like, what was it called? Wild West Showdown?
Yes.
Where it's just like, definitely. You know, we're really putting the focus on these like really slow to fire guns. And that wasn't limited to one round per reload. Right. But it was still this concept of like these clunky, the revolver or the break barrel shotgun, you know, iron sights only.
Yep.
It wasn't about the offense and defense. It was really about, you know, just trying to, there's a guy, shoot. Oh, shoot, I missed it. Now I got to reload my 2-shot shotgun. Crap. You know, it had more of a vibe like that, kind of where the focus was on pulling off the shot, not really about the mechanics of the gadget strategy or reinforcements or anything. Yep.
Exactly. And I think what actually really, and it was actually kind of funny because I went into this just thinking it was going to be kind of like a regular game. So like I wasn't paying attention and I was on defense first. And I was like, well, you know, obviously like I don't know who to pick, so I'm just going to pick one of my mains. I'm going to be Legion. And I was like, okay, we're in the prep phase, and I go and I start reinforcing a wall, and I'm like, I only have one reinforcement. And then all of a sudden I get shot and I'm like, wait, what? Oh, there's no prep phase. Okay, that changes everything. And once, you know, once I was on board with that and figured that out, I was like, okay, so basically it's just like the match starts and everyone just kind of goes at each other and starts shooting.
How'd that feel to you with having no prep phase, as far as aside from like the one shot mechanic, right? Mm-hmm. How did like just going right into it with no prep phase, how'd that feel to you?
It was interesting. I mean, it definitely didn't feel like Rainbow Six Siege. You know, because the entire like base of the prep phase is you have this objective or two objectives if you're playing bomb, that you have to prepare for the assault. Right. This is just like the assault is happening. So get to it. So it was kind of interesting. It made me feel like definitely like I was playing more of like a Call of Duty game, but more with like Siege characters.
Right.
I wouldn't say that it's a mode that I would just like go out of my way to play every time we play. I'm glad I played it, but that's the entire thing about the arcade event. You know, it's they're throwing these mini games in just as a change of pace. For a change of pace game, it was awesome. For a long term thing, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to play it all the time. I would love to see it come back. And play it again for a weekend, but I don't think it's something that needs to like permanently stay.
Right. I agree with you completely on that. The mode itself is just not the kind of mode that I would personally enjoy. So even though I don't necessarily like the Golden Gun event all that much, I'm still glad they did it because there's people that are into it. Like you said, it makes a fun distraction for a weekend. It's not a permanent addition to the game or anything like that. So even though it's not my particular thing, there's people that it's really going to speak to, and then down the road they'll hopefully have other arcade playlists that I'll have a lot of fun with that have different mechanics or different setups or whatever. So right. I think it's a really cool thing.
I will say also it was just kind of nice to pay homage to one of those old school shooter games like GoldenEye. You know, I played a bunch of James Bond games back on the Sega, and those were always fun. The first N64 Bond game I played was GoldenEye, so that was great. You know, and I think it would have been really cool if they had the time and the money to do this, but to like take one of those maps from GoldenEye, like the map in Istanbul, and put it into the Siege map pool for that event, you know, instead of, because it was only on the New Oregon.
Well, I think that would come more in, because the purpose of the arcade playlists that they're doing are to be these quick little insertions rather than like dedicating a lot of development resources.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Plus, you'd have the thing that the Istanbul map was created by another development team and they would have to license it, although they could probably create something inspired by it and get close enough. But, you know, we've talked about GoldenEye before, and it's always kind of surprised me that, like, when you talk about, like, how you used to play GoldenEye, and like, you're old enough to have actually played GoldenEye on the N64? And you're like, yeah.
Barely. I was barely old enough.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, I was, you know, I remember playing GoldenEye on the N64, too. And, like, of course, that was, like, probably, in my opinion, one of the original FPS games that kind of opened up the gateway to the new generation of FPS games. I mean, of course, there's like Wolfenstein and Doom or whatever before it. But as far as like that whole multiplayer concept, but I love that because the internet wasn't a thing yet for the N64 in that kind of a game. Like, I actually remember doing things where like you would play 4-player split screen, but it was all on one TV.
Right.
And I remember like we would do elaborate things like take pieces of cardboard and balance them between two TV tables. And that would cut off the top half of the TV from the bottom half. Yep. And then you would like rig something else up some other way to like do the vertical slice. So you eventually had this cardboard tic-tac-toe in front of your screen. And two people would be standing and playing and two people would be sitting cross-legged on the floor and playing. So that way you couldn't just glance and see the other person's screen when you're playing the 4-player version.
Yep.
I do remember those days.
I definitely did that. I definitely did that too.
Oh, how far the genre has come, huh?
I know. It's ridiculous. I actually still have an N64, and I threw in GoldenEye a while ago, and it was like, wow, these graphics are disgusting.
Right?
Disgusting. How did I think that this was like new age?
Well, yeah, that once upon a time it was. So, you know, as we're spending a lot more time in our homes with the self-quarantines that are going on, what, you know, as we talk about other games, what have you been staying busy with outside of Siege?
So I started playing Ghost Recon Wildlands again. That's nice. Always a fun one. Yep. I actually, we had Thunder Sniper on a couple episodes again. I was helping him get some footage because, you know, he makes some YouTube videos. I was playing that for a little bit. There's a game called Dead Cell that is kind of like a platform game. If you ever played the game House of Dead Ninjas, it's very similar to that. It's pretty much just like a hack and slash kind of game, but you're jumping from platform to platform. Mm-hmm. It's a good time waster. Yeah, because I have all this extra time, I started coming up with single player games that like have long campaigns. So I started playing No Man's Sky.
Oh, nice.
That's been interesting. I'm actually glad that they brought that to Xbox because originally it was just PlayStation. And maybe PC too, because I think it's just Sony owned, or it was. But that's an interesting like exploration kind of base building game.
On my end, I haven't been doing quite as much on the Xbox because I have the Xbox all set up downstairs for when we play. Because when I record my game footage, I use my computer's Elgato HD capture card. I have to have it kind of paired up with my computer to record on. And so I didn't feel like necessarily bringing that up from the downstairs area. But what I did bring up was I dusted off the PS4 Pro. I really don't play it that much. But I'm like, you know what? Let's bring it upstairs. Because right now what's happening is the kids are off of school. So the kids pretty much own the downstairs. They're on the TVs and on the Xbox and whatever in the basement, right? Yeah. So, you know, we've got the finished family room down there. So I brought the PS4 Pro upstairs and hooked it up to the TV in the living room. And I'll be honest, I never played the PlayStation, even though I had it. Because when I play, I'm always playing Siege. But now with having so much more time on my hands, I'm finding that I am on that a little bit more. And you mentioned No Man's Sky. I'm definitely thinking about dusting that off on the PlayStation, because that's where I have No Man's Sky, is on PlayStation.
Right.
But since I last played it, sometime last year, they had come out with a VR update for it. And I want to try it in VR.
I come over when this is all over?
Definitely.
And we can. Yeah.
Definitely have to check that out.
Yes.
Another PlayStation VR title I kind of want to try again is Resident Evil 7 in VR. I already played it. Beat it. But
nope. I remember the one time we were all over at your house and you had me playing and I played like the very beginning part and I got my tongue caught off And I don't think I've ever been so like disgusted in my life and like freaked out. Not a fan.
a little too realistic for you, huh?
just a little bit. I'm into the horror genre, but that was a little too much.
Otherwise, I've been sort of, you know, just kind of messing around with some other games. One that I've really enjoyed in like the last week was the Final Fantasy VII Remake demo was released.
Yeah.
And I was playing that for free on the PlayStation.
Nice.
And it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it was so good. I immediately pre-ordered as soon as I was done with the demo. I'm like, oh, like, I mean, there's some of the gameplay mechanics that I kind of miss, the turn-based, you know, system of selecting, you know, attack or magic or whatever, whereas this is kind of more in real time. But I can get over that. The spirit of the game, they nailed, and it is just amazingly beautiful.
That's
looks
awesome.
So good. So
I will say one other game that I've been playing, so I also have a Nintendo Switch, and actually it was my wife's idea because she also needs a stress reliever because she's, you know, going crazy right now too. We've been playing a lot of Mario Brothers together, and that's been, we actually beat it yesterday.
Okay.
So yeah, it only took, you know, 4 days. So
one thing I've been thinking about a lot is when we talk about Siege, as far as balancing in patches, the development team will release these, like the win-loss delta graphs. And they show, you know, is this player winning a lot? Or I'm sorry, is this operator winning a lot or losing a lot? Are they being overpicked or underpicked? And then in those four possible variations, they plot each operator where they sit within that. And they do use, I think it's platinum and up for those values. They don't look at anything below platinum for those graphs that they show. But one thing that I always kind of wonder about a little bit is the weekly challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think that these influence the player data that they look at, whether it's platinum up for these win delta graphs they plot, or whether it's just looking at the player base at large? I'm thinking specifically of like the 8 wins with a certain CTU challenge.
Yeah.
Because like, is it a thing where they're like, oh, Twitch is getting picked so much, we need to nerf her F2 because she's overpicked. But meantime, the win 8 rounds as GIGN comes up
every other week.
Yeah, it's like every other week. And I mean, is that skewing people toward picking Twitch? Because let's face it, your other choices are Monty, who is a very niche player or niche character. And then you have Doc and Rook, which are heavy and tanky. So out of the 4 of the operator choices you can make, Twitch may be kind of like the most viable one.
Right.
So, you know, like, and then you have that 8 wins as an operator challenge roll around every, it's not every other week, but it sure feels like it. It's often.
It's often.
You know, how much does something like that skew results that they look at?
I feel like it does a lot, actually. And especially, you know, because I feel like there are three, well, I'll even say there's 4 groups that it feels like every single week it's one of them. And it's GSG9, it's FBI, it's GIGN, and it's Spetsnaz. All of them,
ones.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every single time it feels like they're getting, and it's never just like, you know, win 1 round or 3 rounds or something.
Well, they
it's
have
always
the second
like,
one that comes with it. There's the win as 8 of a certain CTU, and then I think the other one is win 4 as a different
as
CTU.
A specific, yep.
And I don't feel like that one skews things as much.
As much. But I feel like 8 is an overkill. And it definitely, like, because, you know, you do these challenges and you get enough renown that it makes it worth it to do them. So, yeah, there's going to be people that, like, you know, we have a 5 stack and all 5 of us are trying to get these challenges. So, you know, every round, two people are, you know, picking the operators, and it's just, yeah, you know, everyone's trying to get them. So then it's like they're getting all of this BS intel of, you know, who is playing these operators more. Oh, we do GIGN every other week. Everyone's playing Twitch. We should probably nerf her a little bit because maybe she's getting overpicked.
And you got to assume that they're taking that into consideration. But yet I also feel like, you know, there's, I mean, Twitch is just sort of my kind of go-to because A, I'm a Twitch main, but B, they keep nerfing her because they say she's overpicked.
Right.
And again, with this 8 GIGN challenge coming around every, you know, it's maybe it is just once a month or something like that, but it feels like, you know, and how much that skews things. It skews things to the point where we will be playing ranked and we'll see weird bans come up.
Yep.
Like, why did they block Capcan and Fuse? That doesn't make, those are weird bans.
Right.
Oh, this week's the Spetsnaz challenge week. They're trolling. Okay. They're trying to prevent somebody from getting the wins on the challenge.
Yep.
Or we've seen, you know, like, just other weird ones, like, you know, IQ and Bandit will come up and you're like, okay, I kind of get Bandit if you want to deny the Bandit trick, but you know, why IQ? Oh, this is the GSG9 challenge week.
Yep.
You know, it's like, so it winds up affecting the meta a little bit too. And it's not like I would say it's like all the time, but we see it, you know, and it's just like, it influences the game in weird ways. Or, you know, kind of going back to how Doc and Rook are some very tanky operators. Maybe you weren't going to pick a team composition. You know, maybe you're a strong roamer. And so you wind up with, and there's people that roam with Doc, but you wind up getting into a one-speed operator instead of the three-speed operator where you're typically comfortable. And now it's affecting your play style. You're just trying to knock off the challenge quick. You know, you're trying to get the extra renown or do the whatever. You're just trying to, you know, kind of get that win off the checklist of the 8 wins you have to get. But now you're changing your play style from what it normally would have been.
Right.
And like, is that necessarily a big deal when there's win 3 or 4? Nah, not really. But win 8? Well, that can wind up taking a little while, especially if you have a rough night.
Yep.
You know, maybe you wind up on a losing streak, and instead of doing it, so maybe instead of playing 8, because 8 wins is assuming you win 8 times in a row.
Exactly. Well,
but if you don't, you're playing that for way longer then. I just think it's interesting to think about how maybe they're making some of the calls of like, oh, we need to nerf Twitch because she's overpicked, or, oh, Capcan's in a weird place and we don't know why he gets picked, but then, is it because of his trap things or is it because of this? And it's like, well, you know, again, are some of these 8 wins as a CTU sort of contributing to that factor? And I think some people would also say, well, if they're just looking at platinum and up, how many platinums are worried about chasing weekly challenges? Probably not that many. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But it just seems like an interesting kind of thing to look at for me.
Yeah.
Another thing I was thinking about, too, is they are coming out with, we know in the future, in this year, they're coming out with a couple of new operator secondary gadgets. They're going to have that motion sensor detector, and they're going to have some kind of, we don't know new what grenade. It is yet, but some kind of, maybe a grenade, some kind of alternate hard breach secondary gadget, which, goodbye Maverick or something, I don't know.
But we'll see.
But, you know, as kind of thinking about new secondary gadgets, I'm wondering, is it time to start thinking about maybe some new attachments? What do you think?
That's tough. I think there's certain things that make sense. And there's certain things that like, there are certain attachments that it's just like, oh yeah, that makes sense to use. But then there are certain things that would be, how can this be, a more effective form of attack or defense. For me, a really good idea, like a good example would be laser sights. Having a attachment of a laser sight, everyone immediately knows where you are.
Right.
You know, you're behind a corner and you see a laser sight against the wall. You know exactly where that person is. What if you were able to toggle that, turn it on or off?
Yeah.
So you only use the laser sight for certain situations, like maybe someone throws out a smoke or something, and you're just using the laser sight for a little bit of extra accuracy instead of just it's always on. I think that would be really cool.
Yes, definitely.
That makes a lot of sense to me. You know, like in other sorts of games, like you can toggle that. So like, why not in this? And I feel like that's also something that you can toggle in. I don't know. I'm not, I don't work for the SWAT team or, you know, stuff like that, but that makes sense. You know, why isn't that implemented in this game?
Right. I have a, I have a pressure sensitive, laser sight on the side of my M4 carbine and it's, you know, when you want it on, you hold the grip. And when you want to let go of it, it turns the laser off. It's just like, yeah, that's kind of the way that should work. But I think having that ability to turn it on and off would be great because I don't put laser sights on anybody. I put them on the shield operators, Monty and Blitz, because, I mean, you can hear them coming from a mile right. away. So what is seeing the red dot in advance do that you weren't already exactly, hearing approach
exactly
but yeah I can tell you the amount of times where I've seen a red dot on a windowsill as an attacker and I'm like there's a defender pointing at that windowsill I know I can't jump through that windowsill you know like or I better toss in a smoke grenade or a flashbang first or whatever they give themselves away
yeah
and yet they're doing what anybody would do oh I hear a guy outside that window I'm gonna be ready for him when he hops in it's like well but I know you're there, you know? So it's like one of those things where I never take the attachment, but if I had the ability to turn it on and off,
I probably would. Mm-hmm.
One thing I like to look at for the concept of attachments and how they work is Ghost Recon Wildlands and the Gunsmith system, or even some of the older Ghost Recon games with Gunsmith, where they had a whole bunch of different attachments you could put on that really changed the way the gun felt. And kind of like where I'm going with this is like, I liked the idea that I could tune my gun almost like, have you ever played, Gran Turismo on the PlayStation?
Yes.
Gran Turismo was like borderline simulator with how you could tweak like the camber angle or the toe angle or the, you know, like you could really alter all the different aspects, adjust the shocks and the, you know, I mean, all these different things that would change the handling of the car. And you would wind up being able to dial it in to fit the kind of driver you were.
Right.
And I would love to be able to do that with weapons in Siege, because I think when you look at guns in the game, for the most part, any given operator with any given gun has a default of like, yep, this is the best way to run that. Or if this is your play style, then yep, you're just doing this and this. And hardly anybody takes suppressors because they reduce damage, and not many people take lasers because they give your position away. So it's like one of these things of like, you kind of, here's the two or three attachments you always run for this guy, for this gun, and that's just the way it is. And I'd love to see that get shaken up a little bit more. I feel like there's some attachments that could be brought into the game that could allow you to maybe more dial in a play style for an operator as opposed to necessarily this is just the best one or two attachments to run. So I'm thinking of things like, again, kind of keeping that Gran Turismo concept in mind of like tuning the weapon to fit a play style that works best for you, right? So maybe having something like choosing the ability, and this wouldn't be on every gun. This would just be on guns that made sense for them. So like a collapsible or a fixed buttstock. So if you have like the collapsible buttstock, maybe you have a faster ADS time, but maybe like the recoil control has a little bit of an offset to account for that. Or if you have the fixed buttstock, maybe you have better recoil control, but a slightly longer ADS time, but your recoil is more stable.
Right.
And again, this wouldn't apply to every weapon, but for instance, like Thatcher's AR-33, it's built off of the H&K platform, and almost all the H&K buttstocks can be swapped out, either a removable buttstock or a collapsible buttstock or a fixed buttstock. So Thatcher's AR-33 can actually, in the real world, it's called the HK-33, can be equipped with a collapsible buttstock if you wanted it, you know, Same with like the MP5. You can get that in real life in a collapsible or a fixed buttstock too. Other things you can do, different kinds of scopes and sights. You know, like right now, the only ones we have for variation are the Spetsnaz ones, which are cool.
They are really cool.
Then when they came out with Mozzie, he had like that new holographic sight, which was neat. And they've done a couple little things like that. And I'd like to see more variation on that. We don't have to necessarily have things that do like more magnification than what you ever had before. Like it can be the same,
right?
Like, you know, barely any, or the same as an ACOG or whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to be different that way, but it can just, it can look different. It can feel different. Maybe different color reticles. Like, you know, everything's red except for the reflex, which is green. I've heard a ton of people that are colorblind, red, green, colorblind, complain that they can't see their sights in the game.
Right, right.
And why Siege doesn't have a colorblind support mode, I have no idea.
Yeah, that is crazy. That is ridiculous.
There's other first-person shooters that have them. So I don't know.
And I think, what was it, last episode or maybe the episode before that, that we were kind of talking about what they could do, you know, to make people throw around a little bit of cash to get like more customization stuff. Like, why couldn't you customize like the reticle sites?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to go Call of Duty customization because their reticles are
no one needs a smiley dumb. Face.
But yeah. Like... I don't want a smiley face or a skull and crossbones or whatever, but like, why not make the green triangle on the reflex sight choose if you want it to be orange or blue or whatever. Right. You know, and you know, the little ACOG, I don't know what you call it, the arrow, the red arrow on the ACOG, you know, what if you wanted that to be yellow or green or whatever? I don't know. You know, why not? I'd pay for the extra attachments for that if that was like a DLC pack or something.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and there's even other things you could do too. Like if you wanted to, do things like, I don't know, like extended magazines, right? And then people are like, well, why wouldn't everybody take an extended magazine? Well, because maybe the extra weight of it will offset your ADS time and cause you to have a little bit more recoil wobble. So there's the trade-off that you make. It's not an automatic attachment. You know, sure, having more ammo without having to reload as often is nice, but my recoil is not as controllable and my ADS time is a little slower. So that's why I make the sacrifice for the trade-off, right?
Right.
Things like match grade triggers, you know, so maybe I can slightly increase or decrease my rate of fire time. Maybe I want to slow down my rate of fire. Maybe Mira's Vector 45 ACP fires a little too fast for me and I want to slow that down just a little bit. So I'll put a match grade trigger on there where I can, you know, or a trigger variant on there where I can maybe slow that rate of fire down a little bit and kind of dial that in a little bit more for myself. I don't know. I just think that would be some kind of cool concepts.
Absolutely. I feel like that's a really easy thing that they could add in for sure.
And some of that would definitely have to come down to balancing concepts. You know, maybe you don't want to touch Mira's Vector 45 ACP because the fact that it is really fast firing rate is used as a balancing mechanic in and of itself. And you don't want to adjust that. But other things that affect recoil control is something that they affect with attachments all the time. You know, so some of those other things are definitely worth looking at, I would think.
For sure.
And then, you know, there's a whole category of suppressors.
That's a big one. That is a really big one.
A lot of people don't take suppressors because it's an automatic damage reduction. And just why would you do that to yourself? Right.
Right.
And you do get the benefit of it doesn't have the threat indicator. If you get hit, you still get the threat indicator. But if the shots don't hit you, you don't necessarily get the threat indicator. And I think the tracer rounds aren't as visible or something like that.
Right.
There's very minor perks, but like still nobody wants to trade off for the damage reduction.
Yep.
And most games, even other competitive first person shooters, many of them don't do damage reductions on silencers.
Right.
Siege isn't the only game to do it. Some games have, but the reality is in real life, suppressors don't affect damage really all that much. They do use, what do they call it? It's lower velocity rounds because, you know, you don't want to crack that barrier for hearing the round. The term is escaping me right now. I have a friend of mine that would be so mad at me right now for forgetting the term of it. But it's a certain kind of round they use that's meant for a suppressor that's lower velocity. And but it doesn't impact the damage really all that much because the point at which that lower velocity round would matter for damage reduction, our engagement rages beyond the battle. You know, I think there was a graphic that came out for Siege that said, like, they measured where everybody got their kills at, and it averaged to be about the length of a school bus. It
was
like 30 feet or something like that. Like, the average kill engagement is 30 feet in the game. Suppressor reduction in damage for lower velocity rounds does not come into play for 30 feet.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, not even close.
Not even close.
There's very few spots in the game. Like, I could see it coming into play if, like, you were Glaz or Kali and you were outside on a tower and you were firing across into the main building and you weren't even in the main building. Like, I could see maybe having some damage reduction in those cases.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, 90% of the weapons in the game, like, the natural damage fall off that occurs wouldn't be like, yes, therefore this weapon is doing 5 points less damage for every round that goes off. You know, like, I don't know. So it winds up being another attachment in the game that very few people wind up using.
Mm-hmm.
And Rogue Nine had done an interesting video where he showed some of the suppressed weapons where it actually didn't reduce the time to kill significantly enough, and you could actually use suppressors on those weapons without fear of the damage reduction mattering all that much. But even then, there's only like a couple,
right?
There's not many, you know. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind them kind of maybe taking a second look at how they handle suppressors, because everybody's like, I don't want that damage reduction. Nope.
I would say I'm pretty sure I only use suppressors on very specific operators. The one that's coming to mind right now is Maverick.
Yes.
And that's just because he's so in close when he is, you know, opening those small holes that, like, being able, if they can't hear you opening, you know, small holes into the reinforced barricades, then they're not going to hear you shooting. So that's, I mean, besides, like, Cav, it was a built-in one on her pistol. That's the only one that I can, like, actively think that, yes, this is the one that I use the suppressor on.
Okay, but here's the thing. When you talk about Cav, she's got the built-in one, right? And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, Cav's pistol's really good. It's silenced. But what if you could, if you had the option to use Cav's pistol without a silencer, and instead of downing in two shots, it downed in one because it did more damage? Would you still run it silenced?
I can say this, I would personally, because I need that silence for what I'm doing, because I, like, every time I down someone, it's because I shoot six shots and only two of them hit.
Okay.
Like I said, back in Golden Gun, I'm not good with pistols. That's just, I'm not good at it. But, like, you know, other people, I can guarantee you other people, especially people that play with us, would take that silencer off because it's like, what, I only have to shoot the person once? Yeah, I don't care. They're not going to hear me. I'm going to down them immediately.
Right. So I think the damage benefit overwhelmingly outweighs what you get when you put it on and lose the damage.
100%.
Yeah. But then I think the question becomes, well, then why wouldn't you do it all the time? Like, why wouldn't just every gun have a silencer then, right? What's the balancing mechanic?
Right.
And I think in that case, you look at it, well, rather than having damage be the balancing mechanic, what if you had ADS time be the balancing mm-hmm. mechanic? Your weapon is now 8 inches longer.
Right.
So now you're going to take an extra third to a half of a second to ADS with that.
Right.
And then maybe depending on the weapon, you can offset that by pairing it up with an angled foregrip. You know, and we're getting into the concept again of tuning the weapon to fit a play style.
Right.
I think that would be a really interesting way to bring more character to some of these, because right now, as it is, every gun has a, this is the optimal setup. This, and this, that's it. You don't mess with the other attachments. This gun doesn't matter.
Even now with the new characters, it just automatically sets it to that too.
Yeah. And there's really no reason to deviate from them for the most part.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think these could be some interesting kind of ideas. Plus, the other trade-off is when you have the suppressor, and I have noticed this in game. When you have a suppressor, because your weapon model is longer, there are mm-hmm. times where I will see the muzzle of that suppressor entering a doorway before I see the operator. And unless they're like at full out sprint, it gives me enough time to react to just, again, seeing that little extra 8-inch barrel coming out ahead of where I would have seen it because it's bigger, it takes up more space, plus it's thicker, right? So it's more easily seen that way too. I have killed people just seeing a suppressor come through a door before the rest of them comes through, because I know, oh, here it is, pre-fire, boom, there it is.
Yep, you know? Exactly.
So, absolutely. You know, there's another sort of, you know, downfall to suppressors too. So if you combine that with a longer ADS time, maybe you don't need to reduce the damage on the suppressors anymore.
For sure. I agree with that. Definitely. Well, so let's go into another Q&A session. So AM Silence wrote this. Seemingly, a lot of people talk about how the game is defender favored. Do you think they should make it so defenders simply cannot go outside at all? This would give the attackers a fair chance, as well as cut down in spawn peeking and eliminate runouts altogether. That's a very good question. What do you think, guys?
I agree with the spirit of this, but I disagree with the exact parameters that are outlined. I think that defender runouts are an effective and viable tactic and should be allowed.
They're annoying as all hell, but yes, they should be allowed.
But the spirit of what he's saying, I agree with, in that it's a little unbalanced, and I wouldn't mind seeing instant tags. So as opposed to the 2 second delay, because really it's closer to three, because you have that kind of like you step out and then it's one and then you're tagged. Like, I'd almost rather just see it be instantaneous tag, but still allowing it. Like, I don't agree that it should just not be allowed at all.
And that even goes back to, once again, a couple episodes ago when we were originally talking about the new operators, Iana and Oryx. And I think even in one of your video about how to play Oryx, there was a clip about how he is actually a better spawn peeker than other people, because he can run out faster than everyone else using his ability to get himself out there and, you know, get around and shoot people before he's even recognized, because he has that speed that gives him that extra distance.
At home right now, I wish all of you listening could see Dan's gestures as he's describing this, as he lifts up the invisible gun to his shoulder as if he's firing it and flexing Oryx's giant muscles as he Naruto dashes. All of these gems are not known to you at home listening on audio.
It's just me and Isaacat. Hey, Isaacat, look at me run.
I'm sorry. I just had to go there.
You have to add it in. It's great.
I wasn't going to say anything on pulling up the gun, but on the Naruto run flex, I had to share that one.
I mean, I also was at Area 51, all I'm going to say, so.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think about whether they could even do that or not do it? Or
I agree with the theory, but once again, part of the game with strategic offense and defense is finding those advantages. And spawn peeker's advantage is a real thing. And I don't think that you should penalize defenders because they're better at spawn peeking than the attacker is at knowing where the spawn is coming or the spawn peak is coming.
Right. And attackers have tools at their disposal for doing it. First of all is placing drones at likely positions, but there's no way you can place a drone at every probable position and see it every time it happens. But then when you come out of your spawns, just knowing, hey, there's three windows on this side of the building. I'm going to come out scoped in, looking at about where that first window is. Yep, that's clear. Second one, I see a broken board on that second one. I'm going to pull back a second. You know, so I mean, it's not like it's something you can't do anything about, and it is a valid tactic. It is a frustrating tactic. I hate being killed by a spawn peek, but at the same time, it is completely valid to do, and there are ways for the attackers to deal with it. Now, if you're talking about actual spawn killing, where they can get into a certain position and see you literally spawn into the world and you materialize and they shoot you before you've even taken a step. Now that's BS, but that's not what we're talking about. Yeah, that's a separate discussion.
But they've also, I feel like they've also gone along they've done a lot of stuff to try to stop that from happening.
Right. Well, overall, to a certain extent. Yeah, no, I think that they've done a really good job. And whenever a new one is discovered, they're pretty good about cleaning it up in the next round of, you know, map bug fixes or whatever. Yeah. So they do a good job of trying to minimize that kind of thing. But I think it's still a very good question to ask.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, man.
Well, if you want to post your own question, you can head over to the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. And we do have a Q&A thread there that's pinned to the top. Feel free to add anything you want in there to ask us to answer, and we may do so on a future show. Now, next week, we will also be coming to you with whatever is new and happening in the community. We've got some things we're working on right now under the hood. So look forward to that next week as we are all trying to survive this lockdown self-quarantine together. And from us to you, we will see you guys next week.
This has been Rainbow Six Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for even more Rainbow Six talk, news, and information.